There we are. Richmond Behavioral Health Authority is based in downtown Richmond, Virginia. I am the substance abuse director there, but I'm also the leader of the research and evaluation small team that we have. Here we are, gathered outside the front door of the RBHA, all wearing our Virginia Commonwealth University Final Four t-shirts, celebrating last spring. It was very exciting for us. Also, I have no financial conflicts to disclose. All my conflicts are either psychological or social in nature. Just to tell you a little bit about who we are, we're the statutorily designated provider of behavioral health care services. Public sector behavioral health care services in Richmond provide mental health, substance use disorder, and intellectual disability and crisis intervention services there. We employ a little over 500 employees, so I guess that makes us the little kid on the block up here, about 1/70th the size of ExxonMobil. But we provide an array of services, and what we share with everyone that's been up here so far is we have a strong interest in the health and wellness of our employees and safety as well, as we heard earlier. We have had an existing wellness program at RBHA for a little over 7 years now. I call this my recruitment poster. This is what I use to try to recruit young new staff to our organization and to recruit graduate students from psychology and public health to come over and do their internships at our place. We have a wonderful gym. The employees literally have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week access to this. If you're an employee, you or your family can access this whenever it's convenient to you. Swipe card will get you in. They've all got the swipe cards. In addition to that, the organization has committed an additional 30 minutes, so if you want to take time while you're on the clock, you get 30 minutes on the agency's time to do workout, so we're very invested in that. In addition to the gym, we've had group fitness activities. This is my other recruitment poster. We have group fitness activities at our main location. They've been going on for about 7 years, although we've ramped them up a bit since we started the weight loss challenge that I'm going to talk to you about today. One of the reasons, among the others that have been discussed by everybody that's preceded me up here at the podium today, is that, like all organizations that have to be self-funding, and we have to zero out our budget every year, that the healthcare costs have gone up continually for 2 decades now. And it has taken a substantial chunk out of our operating budget to pay for the health plans for employees. So we are interested in doing things that will help contain those costs. And one of the things we think we can do is to help people improve their overall health. Some of the wellness components that existed prior to the introduction of the weight loss challenge included individualized blood pressure, glucose, and cholesterol screenings. Those can be arranged on an individual basis. Free flu shots are offered to anybody who wants them every year. We have a variety of lunch and learns on health topics provided at lunchtime, and we even have massage days once or twice a year where people can come relax a little bit, de-stress. We've been a smoke-free environment for a long time, and these are in addition to the gym access and the group activities that we just showed you slides of. So we marketed this to our employees. We really wanted to get folks involved. You can walk through our agency and you can see we have a number of obese employees and some people that are really putting their health at risk. And so we marketed this, and the marketing point for us was that this was a weight loss challenge. We were trying to tap into some of the TV shows that are popular now, like The Biggest Loser and so forth, and you know, get something they're probably seeing in the evening on TV. But we had some other goals or objectives in mind, too. We're hoping to promote an overall healthier lifestyle, increase activity level, et cetera. And we were also hoping to achieve some workplace benefits that extended beyond the individual to employee morale and perhaps team cohesion and team building as well. The design of this, it was a 15-week period of time from October 2010 to February 2011. So what I want to point out here is that's hitting three big holidays that are doomsday for people that are trying to maintain their weight, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. So we tackled all of them during the weight loss challenge. We promoted a team concept, so we wanted people to join a weight loss team so that you weren't just competing as an individual here, but you were also part of a team. We did that in part to promote social reinforcement aspects of this and a little air of competitiveness, not unlike the Biggest Loser. So 2 to 6 employees, and then they had to select a captain from amongst themselves. Our wellness coordinator who designed this challenge is in the room today, Jenny Roberts, right here. I'm going to give a shout out. Thank you. Jenny observed and recorded the weight at both initial weigh-in and at final weigh-out. And then in the interim period of during those 15 weeks, the team captains took the weights of the members of their team, and that was an optional thing. So if you wanted to weigh in every week, you could. If you wanted to weigh in every other week, you could. If you didn't want to weigh in at all, that was okay too. But what we did to incentivize that is that if you did weigh in front of your captain and your captain turned in your weights to the wellness coordinator and you lost at least 1 pound since your last weigh-in, your name got thrown into a little fishbowl. And so we also did $50 drawings every week. So people had some interim reinforcement opportunities for ongoing things. A number of the practices that we used in this weight loss challenge were tied to the research, obviously use of incentives. The team approach has been shown to be effective in some previous work that's been done, and obviously the ongoing reinforcement with the weekly reinforcement. So these are just some of the things that have previously been shown to be effective in the literature. So we wanted to make this significant enough to draw people into it and get the attention of the people who really needed to be in there. We heard in the earlier talk that sometimes the hardest part of this is marketing it to the folks who need it the most. So there was a $500 prize offered for the single individual with the greatest percentage of weight loss at the end of the 15 weeks. And then we had 3 team prizes with, and please note this, everybody on the team would win $500 for the team at the highest weight loss percentage, $250 per person at the team at the second highest average weight loss per team member, and $100 per person for the third highest average weight loss team. And then you can see from this that someone theoretically and actually ended up doing it could win both the individual and one of the team prizes. So there was a significant financial incentive out there for people to participate. And I think that that helped us draw in some people that were weight challenged within the organization. And then along the way, as I mentioned before, we had the $50 a week drawing for those who opted to weigh in if they lost at least a pound since the last one. Some of the wellness program components that were added for this challenge, Zumba, you may or may not know about, is a very active group dance activity that's part of our group fitness. It's been added once a week. It's free to employees. That has continued since then. It was very, very well received. We had GinnyApproved.com, which is a website that is basically self-directed and optional. You could go there if you wanted to. We made people aware that it was there. And if you went there, you could take yourself to learn about caloric intake of the food groups that were available to you. You could go there and learn about glycemic index or exercise activities, kind of anywhere you wanted to go to learn some information that might be helpful for you planning out your weight loss. The challenge teams was a new concept for us, and obviously we were trying to tap into social support. The ongoing weight loss tracking and then weekly and end of the challenge financial incentives were significant components. And on top of all that, we added healthy vending options. So we've got over 330 of our 500 plus employees are in this one large building, so we have several vending sites within the building. And quite frankly, when we looked at those things, they were not offering the healthiest options that were available out there. So a small group of us decided to push for some changes in that, and at the beginning of the weight loss challenge, lo and behold, we changed all the vending machines in the agency. So all of a sudden, people could get salads. You could get some of the like lean cuisine things in the vending machine. So a very big changeover from what used to be nothing but candy bars, potato chips, and full sugared sodas. So And the access piece is important, too. Before, you would have to go in there with exact change. So we put all these modern things in there. So you don't have to have money on you. You can bring your credit card if you want to and buy your lunch in there. So the access improved as well with that. So when we got to the very end of that 15-week period, let me just walk you through. I'm going to go down that second column first. We started off with 195 people signing up for the challenge. That's 43% of the total workforce. We had 78 people drop out along the way, so we ended up with 117 people that finished the weight loss challenge. if you put all of the people in the hopper for those 195 people, there was an average weight loss of 5.8 pounds at the end of 15 weeks. Interestingly, since we had interim weights taken weekly on just about everybody that was in there, we had finished weights for those, or last weight known for people who dropped out and didn't complete the challenge. Those people lost an average of 4.2 pounds, and then the finishers, the people who made it to the finish line, actually lost 7.2 pounds apiece. So we were pretty pleased with that. And this is what will knock your socks off here and show what people are motivated for money. Both the first and second place team lost averages of more than 10% of their total body weight per person. First place team lost almost 20% of their total body weight per person and almost 40 pounds per team member. That's in 15 weeks. I'm not necessarily recommending that much at one time, but they did it. They were very motivated. And the second place team was almost 22 pounds a team member during the challenge. And here's Skinny. This is the first place winner. This gentleman, known to all of us at the agency, had gotten a little large, and he decided to change his life, and he did. He lost 55 pounds for 21% of his total body weight. Those are really his old pants. This was not a staged performance here. So, we wanted to embellish our findings or enhance our knowledge of what we learned from this, not just have the weights themselves. So we administered some surveys, and we did them at two points in time. We did them immediately post weight loss challenge, and then we did it again 9 months after the completion of this. So we had 195 employees in the weight loss challenge, and we had 100 participants complete the post-challenge survey. That was out of 117 people that actually completed the challenge. So 85% completion rate is pretty darn good in my book. And we captured 50% of the original signed up people in that immediate survey. And at the 9 month mark, we changed our methods here a little bit. And I know that that's a problem with this particular study here, but we were concerned about the efficiency of the paper and pencil survey and getting people to do that. So we went to SurveyMonkey and did it electronically. And interestingly, we got a much higher response rate when we did that. And so we got 147 agency employees, which included 69 challenge participants and 78 non-participants. And we were asking people, this is a survey that branched off depending on whether they were a participant or not. So we were going to ask the non-participants, how come you didn't do it, and maybe would you do it if you had the chance to do it again? So the two basic things we were trying to accomplish with these is to enhance our evaluation of the effectiveness of the overall weight challenge, and then hope to better understand, as we're talking about today, some of the barriers and facilitators to change, and let people tell us, you know, what motivated you to A, sign up, and B, continue participating. We kind of suspected that that might actually change over time, and we did find that to be somewhat true. I won't go over all the survey topics on the right-hand side there, but these are some of the things we were asking people about on the surveys. We were also a little bit interested in whether the people who participated in the challenge and in the surveys were reflective of the demographics of the overall agency. So if you look down the two center columns, you have the RBHA percentage, that's our total workforce, and look at the challenge participants. I'm very satisfied that we have a very representative group in terms of age representation, and we even got a significant number of people in their 50s. I noticed someone earlier was saying that's a problematic group, so I think maybe the financial incentives help pull them into the activity level here. And then breaking it down by these so-called generations of participants, it looks like the Generation Y group is the group that kind of fell off the most in the follow-up surveys, if you look across these going from left to right. Another way to look at it is gender. If you look at the agency on the far left and then the post-challenge and follow-up challenge surveys on the right-hand side, they're almost identical to each other. So the gender basis for the surveys is almost identical. But if you look at the second group from the left, the participants, the people who signed up for the challenge, And we're not sure what to make of this yet, but the men did not sign up as quickly or as strongly as the females did within our organization. So initial sign-up, females were overrepresented compared to the rest of the agency. And if you look at it in terms of racial backgrounds and so forth, at the post-challenge point survey, we're still almost identical to the RBHA as a whole in terms of racial characteristics. And interesting, when I said we had more people respond on the electronic survey at the nine-month follow-up point, when you look at the data, what really happened is we had a lot more of our white employees respond, so that changed the dynamics of the racial mix here by the participants. We really didn't get a drop-off so much in the African-Americans as that increase in participation was largely from white folks, and we haven't figured that one out yet either. So quickly summarizing, 82% of the challenge completers lost some weight. The people who did lose some weight lost an average of 8 pounds, and you remember we had about a 7.2-pound average, which includes those people that finished but didn't lose weight. And then the first two columns in this lower chart are taken directly from weigh-ins, and then the last figure on the right is taken from self-report at the nine-month survey, and we feel like we got good bang for the buck out of this. Participants lost weight, and they reduced their BMI categories, and then this is just another way to represent that. If you look at the red bars, when we started, the challenge participants, 64% of them were obese and 20% were overweight, only 16% in the normal range. That improves dramatically by the time you get to the blue bars, which is immediately post-challenge. And what we feel very good about at 9 months post-challenge, we actually still increased a little bit, those in the normal range, had a little drop-off in the overweight range and a slight uptick again in the obese range, but it didn't go back to baseline. So we felt good about that as well. And when we looked at the barriers and the factors that influenced people originally to sign up, the factors that people self-reported as being influential in why they wanted to sign up, they wanted to improve health and wellness, their fitness levels, and lose weight. Those were the big ones. The gym was about three-quarters of the employees, as were the financial incentives as well. And then when we asked them about what kept you involved in this challenge, because obviously some people dropped out. The ones who stayed in, what kept you in? Desire to lose weight rose to the top. So there was a slight uptick there, a slight downtick with the desire to improve overall health and fitness levels. Financial incentives remained significant for about three-quarters of the people. And we're only seeing about 2 out of 3 people responding positively to the team approach here. So I guess we haven't perfected that yet at this point in time. Things that were correlated with weight loss, pre-weight significantly and positively correlated with pounds lost. That's a no-brainer. The more you weighed, the more weight you had to lose. They lost the most weight. The first green bullet here, personal desire to lose weight as an initial motivator was significantly and positively correlated with pounds lost. So if somebody signed up for this and said, I want to lose weight, they were going to lose weight. So that was a nice indicator there. And the financial incentives, even though they weren't rated that highly by all the employees that finished these surveys, when we looked at what was actually correlated with weight loss, the people who said the financial incentives were significant were the ones who lost weight. We asked them, what are you likely to continue? We saw this in the previous study that was reported up here. So this is right after the challenge was over. We had 90% of the people telling us they're going to continue to eat healthy foods. 8 out of 10 saying they're going to monitor portion size. 2 out of 3 are going to stay with the gym. 50% are going to stay with the group activities. And we asked them about some of those work-related changes in their work areas. 2 out of 3 saying that it was more employee cohesion as a result of this. A little over 50% increased job satisfaction, and a little over 50% with decreased work-related stress. Specific barriers. If someone said, I don't feel like losing weight is important to me, they didn't sign up. I mean, it was that simple. That was by far the reason why people didn't sign up. It didn't matter what they weighed. If they said, I'm not interested in losing weight, they didn't sign up. 45% of our participants felt like their coworker support was helpful along the way that kept them involved in the challenge. And 52% said that they felt the improving employee morale was helpful in keeping them involved. some of the follow-up survey findings that are, I think, most significant here. At 9 months out, 60% of the participants maintained at least some level of weight loss at that follow-up point, and 24% kept all the weight off that they lost, or they continued to lose even more weight, so we felt very good about that. And remember, I said 90% said they were going to continue their healthy eating habits. Well, I was down to 50% actually doing it by 9 months out. So there's a drop-off, but not anything to discourage us at that point in time. Over half said they would all do all this again, and I'm seeing our next version of this in the previous three presentations, because 9 out of 10 people said they wanted more biometric markers and not just the weight the next time we focused on this, which makes some sense. Some people may be motivated to lose their weight. Other people are motivated to get their blood pressure down. Somebody else is motivated to get their glucose under control. So we'd like to bring all of those into play next time. And so I think some of these previous presentations have given us some great ideas in the past. I think I've really summarized most of that stuff already. So I think in conclusion, I would just say that these weight loss challenges can be an effective method to promote employee health and wellness. And it happens through weight loss, increased activity, some dietary changes, and increased morale within the workforce. The facilitators and barriers vary across individuals, but if you want a place to start, ask somebody if they want to lose weight, or I would probably extend that at this point in time, do you want to get your blood pressure under control, and then provide an opportunity for them to do that. Obviously, the limitations here, this was a biased, non-random selection process. We had two different survey methods used at the post-challenge and 9-month follow-up. And then something that could be a strength or a weakness, we had a pre-existing community of health promotion. So we had some ongoing promotion that may have biased people in how they responded to some of this stuff. So we'll do it again in the near future. We'll use more biometric markers, and we'll measure self-efficacy and probably stage of change if we can figure out the best way to do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. As promised, we have some time for questions. This is a fairly large room, so we just ask that you please project your voice so that everybody can hear you. I hope you were writing them down during the presentations. Are there any questions of any of our panelists? Yes.
I'd like to take a stab at that if I can. We are a governmental agency, let me say that, and we have probably pushed it a little bit, but there's many government agencies in Virginia who are using incentives now, so I don't buy that that's a prohibition, but let me just put it in perspective.
I work for your federal government.
All right, well, somebody ought to teach them about contingency management. We have an overall operating budget of $40 million. Our total wellness budget is $15,000. That's 0.03% of our total operating. So it's less than a drop in the bucket. Total cost per employee for the wellness, $30 an employee per year. Again, minuscule. Well, you can use this, though, when you take it back. The wellness challenge itself was $4,000, and that was 25%+ of the wellness budget, and that was 0.1% of the overall agency budget, and the cost per participant of the 195 that signed up was $20. I mean, I don't know how you get more cost effective than that.
Judith, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, that I understand the problem of presenting it. Sometimes the recognition alone turns out to be significant, so if you have a place where you can prominently display the, you know, the winner of whatever the particular competition is, something along those lines, or if there's, I don't know if you're allowed to do this in the federal government, but the person gets some extra time off or gets to leave early or something like that, there can be a lot of incentives that don't have to be financial, and really for people to get recognition, that actually goes a surprisingly long way.
Question, yes, Laura.
Yeah, I think I work in the state of North Carolina, and we're not allowed to do incentives. It doesn't matter how much we say it saves anybody any money. But the way around it
Good way around the system, mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I hope no one's recording. Two health risk assessments in our hospital, in the hospital that I work in, for about a year. But one of the biggest barriers we've been coming up against is the issue about confidentiality and the distrust of the employees about divulging this information to their work, to their workplace. And I'm wondering if you have had that problem and how you have been able to overcome that.
Vicki, you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. Yeah, that's always a big concern, and it certainly has been in our company. We use a third party who administers the health risk appraisal and is able to keep that information separate from ExxonMobil. Any data that ExxonMobil would receive is, you know, washed of identifiers and is, we will get data, however, it won't be personally identifiable.
We have that same situation, but the employees don't really understand that. But how do you communicate that effectively to the employees?
Yeah, I think it does take a lot of communication, and eventually I think you will have a small percentage of the population that you could say it as much as you want, and they will not believe it. But for the majority of people, if they hear the process and they understand it, then they will go on and participate because it behooves them and because we can show that it is confidential. And that includes, we have unionized facilities and various things. So we meet with the union. We talk with them. We tell them, if these are the questions you're asked, this is what we can tell you. And then they can also help interface when they're comfortable with the information that we've given them.
Questions? Yes.
I work with the American Nurses Association. We're trying to do a healthy nurse program and get nurses to look at their own wellness and health, this not to give to their patients. The huge problem in the hospitals, again, is trying to find the time for the nurse to do it. If she works an 8, 12, or 16-hour shift, she may not want to do it after work. And usually, a lot of times, the nurse's workday is not set up that they can even carve out time for lunch, much less anything else. I was wondering how,
we have employees who work off-site at day treatment facilities, and I think my suggestion to you is they really need to see models who have figured out how to do that. They need to see other employees tell them what they did to organize it in their own lives. Some of the original day treatment folks who came, because they had to travel to come back to the main site and then figure out how to do it before or after work. Once one of them did it and they start talking about it back there, then others would try it. Frequently, they would come over two or three at a time and do it together. So that was just one potential option.
Any other?
Oh, I was just going to make a comment to that also. It seems that that's one of the advantages of using a participatory process, because the employees themselves sort of identify what they might enjoy and what they think is possible. And sometimes if someone else is planning the intervention, the researchers or the practitioners, we think we understand their needs, but we don't really. So a lot of that means getting the people involved from the bottom up to try to develop programs that would be helpful to them and convenient and they're actually going to utilize.
And I was going to say, it is an area that is, in essence, a barrier. Your work life often sort of overtakes your health schedule, and it can be hard to find time to plan and do things appropriate. But I think there has to be coaching that focuses on planning. So planning your food, and realistically planning, the fact that you may not be able to go down to the cafeteria and get something healthy, so you need to pack something to take with you so you don't run to the vending machine unless you have their vending machines, which are really good, it sounds like. But, so that you have something ready. Realistically, a nurse who's working, if it's a 12-hour day, you may not be able to exercise on the days that you work. So you plan and you may look at a longer range, like a work week, your week. When in the week can you work out? You have some days off, so maybe you have to be satisfied that you're going to work out 3 days a week and commit to that, knowing that on your work day, it's just too full and you're not going to get it in. So some of it's just really realistically looking at your work schedule and planning your week to introduce those healthy behaviors. In addition to helping the workplace become more healthy, the individual have to do some of their own strategy too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it was you, Victoria. You said that once
we
put the biometrics, some of the
people got that result, but then possibly discouraged them from doing the health risk analysis. And you found that in the pilot, and yet you implemented the program. Had you thought about reversing those two things? In other words, having the health risk analysis done first, because it sort of triggers, oh, gee, this is kind of how I'm living, so that by the time you get the biometrics, you're not so shocked.
I don't know. Maybe you have it.
We hadn't really thought about that. One value of the benefit that we're using is we think an on-site screening, and then when they get online to do their health assessment, their numbers are already entered, and they're informed, so the person doesn't have to remember their numbers, keep track of a little bit of paper, or lie or make up what their numbers actually are. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why we're doing biometric screening first. But that is something.
When I took the health risk assessment, I was like, oh. Kind of an awareness thing, and I think awareness is kind of first, and then you get the reality of the figures. Anyway, it's just a thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's something that we'll probably look at. It's an interesting thought, whether doing it in the reverse improves engagement or not. I think there's some people, and this is just my experience as a physician, is there's some people who really want to know their number, and they're leaning over, and their cigarettes and everything are dropping out of their pocket because they just can't wait to hear what their cholesterol is. But that's all they just want to know so they can tell the guys what theirs is and they can all talk about it. But they aren't really there to change yet. And you have to keep working with people like that.
The HR is a good tool for always possible data.
Yeah.
I think we have time for one more. Yes.
The vendor that we use has a website portal that we have direct our employees through. A lot of activities occur through that portal, including their appointments with their coach and whatnot. So we keep driving them to the portal. But it includes nutrition information. They can build, you know, all kinds of things. But it also has exercise plans, and it has them based on what equipment is available to you. So if you're traveling and you have no equipment, it can build an exercise program. So because we have a lot of travelers, we have business travelers constantly, and that is a very big issue. How do you continue healthy habits when you travel? And that's a whole other discussion. But that does help to have a website and some access for them.
All right, excellent questions. Thank you. We are out of time for this session, but if you want to ask some questions of the panelists, I'm sure they'll be willing to take them afterwards. Remember, we have some handouts by the door, and help me again thank the panelists.